Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today, we have author interview Farah Rashan, the author of The Boyfriend Project, which officially is today's publication day for this great book. Hi, Farah.
Hi there.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little about yourself.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this. And a little bit about myself. Well, I am a full-time writer and doggy mother to one little chihuahua. I love to travel. Anyone who follows me on social media knows that I am absolutely obsessed with Disney World and Broadway and my family and I just like to, you know, those are my things. Traveling, Disney, Broadway, chocolate. That's pretty much me.
I love your Disney content, by the way. It inspires me to be like, oh, I should go to Disney sometime. So
can't wait until I can get back there. Yes, I love it.
I know. So what inspired you to become a writer?
You know, writing is just something I've always done. I was always making up stories as a kid. Maybe I just like to lie. I don't know. But I was always making up stories. But I didn't intentionally set out to be a professional writer. You know, I have a couple of degrees in psychology. I had all intentions of working in just in the business sector. As an industrial organizational psychologist. And then, but writing was just something I did as a hobby. But my mom happened to find one of my old manuscripts because I hid it from people for a long time. And, you know, she said, well, why aren't you doing this? And that was kind of the spark. I just, you know, I thought, well, maybe I can. And it feels so long ago that, you know, those aspirations about being a psychologist, because writing has just been my life for the last 20 years or so. But yeah, it's, well, that's not professionally writing, but considering myself, you know, on that track. I've been published for about, I think about 10, 12 years. I don't know. I don't math well, but it's been a while.
So thinking about when you started, you know, writing and just getting that journey to get your first book published, what was that like?
Well, I kind of was on the track which people consider, you know, normal. They say that you usually take about 5 years or so, and that's pretty much what happened with me. I joined Romance Writers of America back in, like, 2002, I think, after going to a local library event with a local author, and she mentioned it. And, you know, I just went about learning the craft, really, you know, learning how to write. And it took about 5 years until I actually got an agent and then got my first book published with Dorchester Publishing. But yeah, it was a pretty, you know, like I said, pretty much how most people consider it. You learn how to write, you get an agent, you thankfully find a publisher. So that was pretty much my journey.
I love it. And so you write romance. So what do you like best about writing romance?
You know, it's all about the happily ever after for me. You know, the uplifting part of our genre, the emotional part of it. That's just what I gravitate to. And, you know, back when I was in college and grad school, I read more of the mystery and suspense. You know, I loved when John Grisham first came out with his books. I gobbled them up. I still own all of them in hardback, and I I read Oprah's book club, all of those books, I would always read them, but then I realized that I was always depressed after I finished. And I read romance a little earlier, but it wasn't until my sister, I credit her giving me an old Laverl Spencer, and I realized, oh, I really do like these books. Why am I not reading more of these? So that's, you know, that's how I kind of, that was my journey to romance. And I love it. It's my favorite genre, not only to write, but to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something to be said about the happily ever after or the happy for now. There's like,
yes.
It gives you an ending. It gives you some sort of like guarantee that there's going to be a good ending of some sort. So.
Exactly. You know, I love when authors torture characters and make you wonder how they will ever survive, you know, all that they've been through. But the one great thing about romance is that, you know, they will. You're guaranteed that happy ending. So you can put them through the ringer and just know that it'll work out in the end. That's why I think, you know, that's why I think so many people gravitate toward romance, especially in times like this where we need, you know, we need some happy in our lives. So, yeah.
I love it. So let's talk about writing. Do you call an outline or do you see where the story leads? Yeah.
Oh, I'm an obsessive plotter. I wasn't always. My first two books, I actually wrote by the seat of my pants.
Okay.
And anyone who has ever taken, because I teach workshops on my plotting and outlining process, people would not believe, you know, I've gravitated from seat of your pants to as much as I plot, which I do now. But I do put a lot of work into my characters. You know, I want to know as much about my characters and their personalities before I ever start writing a book. And I do a lot of storyboarding. I basically have every single scene plotted out before I ever start typing the actual book.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty intense process. Takes me several weeks. I wish I had the luxury of taking about a month. Unfortunately, with deadlines, you know, I can't take that long to do it because I actually have to start writing. But yeah, I need that roadmap because I can easily go off and, you know, have to delete two or three chapters because my mind went somewhere else that really didn't fit with the book. So for me, plotting definitely works best.
And so how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of ideas, inspirations, characters, or different tidbits in a series?
Well, that has changed a lot over the years. I write a lot of series. That's most of my books tend to, you know, be in series. And what works for me now is I do a lot of my writing in Scrivener. I don't know how many of you listeners, you know what Scrivener is, but it's a fabulous software that allows you to organize everything. They call it the binder, where it's basically a binder that you can keep all these different parts of your novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I do, you know, every book gets its own Scrivener file.
Mm-hmm.
Where I electronically put all of this information in there. But I recently discovered Happy Planners. I have some friends who are huge planner people. And I resisted for the longest time because I didn't need anything else that I could spend money on. But I discovered that Happy Planner really works with the way my mind works in organizing.
Mm-hmm.
So now every book also gets a Happy Planner. Mm-hmm. And I can physically, you know, plan it based on the characters, the setting. Every section of the book has its own tab, and it just really helps with, like I said, the way my brain works and how I need things organized. I love the Happy Planner and my Scrivener file. So yeah.
I love it. I love asking this question and always get inspired different ways to organize the chaos, because it's a lot of like, you're brainstorming, you're coming up with ideas, and you have all these tidbits. And so each author has their own method to the madness. And I love asking this question for that reason, because I'm like, I've learned something new. Like, I didn't realize you use a Happy Planner as a way to organize your thoughts. That's a really great tip.
Yeah, I love hearing other authors say it, because a lot of my planning, it's been tidbits that I've learned along the way from other authors. So I'm happy you asked this question too, because maybe I can find something to, you know, to add to my arsenal. But yeah, I love that you can easily pull things out and put things back into the happy planner. It's just something about it that really works for me. You know, and I have sticky notes everywhere. So I have some sections where I can just put sticky notes there so I don't lose that info. But yeah, it works. It works for me.
That's awesome. So do you share your work along the way, or do you wait till it's completed for others to read?
Well, that's another that's another thing with me. Usually, so I have a critique group that I've been with them. It's going on. No, it's 18 years. I've been with my critique group for 18 years now. Wow. And they usually get the first three chapters or the first 50 pages or so, just because I trust them. You know, we've been together so long that I know which member is going to look for certain things. You know, will tell me where the holes are. One of them is really good at getting rid of all of my extra fluff. You know, she's a really good editor. So I do trust them to help me whip the first part of the book into shape. But recently, I just moved to Grand Central Forever. And for the first time, I've actually shared part of the book with my editor. Okay. In all of these years, you know, 20 some odd traditionally published books, I had never shared such with my editor. I usually like to just turn Leah Hoshin-Smith so much, because she did such a great job with The Boyfriend Project, that I was actually happy to share the first 100 pages or so, you know, with her, just to get her feedback. So it's changed. And I guess it really is a matter of trust. You know, if you can trust someone with your work, it makes it easier to share. So yeah, I guess I share very little you know, with very few people, but I am open to doing that.
I like it. I like the fact just the feedback. And this is such a unique process, and it's so individual. Like, not everyone wants to share. Sometimes you just want to wait till it's perfect. You go through multiple drafts before it's ready to share. And other people are like, I have beta readers, or I have critique circle. Like, each author has their own journey and their own level of comfort and their own circle of trust. So
yes. And I know a lot of people do, you know, they have beta readers, but I think, like with my critique group, again, with us knowing each other so long, mm-hmm. I know some of them, you know, some that don't necessarily like this trope or this plot line, so they may be harder on it. So I know to take that with, I won't say a grain of salt, but having that, you know, if one of my critique group members tells me, oh no, I don't like this, you should change it, I kind of know the reasoning behind that, you know, that critique, when I realize, oh wait, yeah, it's just that she doesn't really like this. Whereas a beta reader, you never know if is it really bad, something I need to change, or is it just not this person's jam, you know, it's harder. So again, it's that trust. It's that trust in knowing someone.
So let's talk about The Boyfriend Project. What was the source of inspiration for this series?
Well, you know, in the book, it opens with these three women who are, who discover via a live tweet, one character is tweeting about her date that she's on. Mm-hmm. And the other two women realize that, hey, I'm dating that same guy. And it actually, I got the idea because I'd seen similar things on Twitter, you know, not this specific scenario, although I've learned since that this scenario kind of has happened on Twitter. I just happened to miss it. But I've been as drawn to live tweeting events as the next person. And I just thought, you know, that would be a cool way to you know, something to incorporate into a book. So blame my addiction to Twitter. That is what inspired the Boyfriend Project. So I guess it's not all bad to be addicted to Twitter.
I love it. I think it just, it felt timely as someone who's seen quite a few viral moments. It just felt like a timely book. And then it's hard to build relationships and fall in love. And just like, it felt like you just, it felt like contemporary. Like it's just happening. Like this is real life. And so we live in a world where Twitter, where live tweets happen and viral moments occur. And we are just part of it. We're either a spectator, like just people watching it, or we're like, you know, living it. So.
Yes.
So you touched upon female friendships and how hard it can be to make friends as an adult. So Mia meets her squad goal on this viral tweet moment. Why present an unlikely friendship in this novel as opposed to just already having a set of group of friends that they're just, you know, going along for the ride?
You know, and that's usually how I am with my books. You know, they have a best friend that's like the person who they lean on. But for this book in particular, when I looked at the relationship between the three women, it could have gone one of two ways. You know, they could have attacked each other, or they could have banded together. So, of course, you know, for me, it's about the female friendships. They will band together. And I just thought that showing the three of them taking the high road, becoming these three people they could lean on, because they were all, they're all very independent women who just did not realize that this female friendship, that bond was missing in their lives. So it just kind of organically happened for this book, where it just, it was necessary for this book. So yeah, it's just one of those things where it just worked really well with this story.
Yeah, it worked really well. I love the Samia question, even just going for a happy hour, like, because it's something that I struggle to, like, you know.
Yeah.
I think like when you think about it, like you're so career-minded, you're looking at all this other stuff, you have a family life, you have all these different things, and you add friendships. They can be a great thing. They're a great addition to your life, but there's always a struggle of like just initially starting those
friendships. Yeah, like, it's time, and it's something else you have to put work into. Even, you know, so you make that calculation: is this going to take more from me than I'm going to get out of it? And that's that particular scene. I know I can remember exactly what you're talking about. That's what I was hoping to portray. You know, where she realizes, yes, I need this in my life. So I am going to put in the effort to continue this, you know, whatever this new friendship is with these three women, because she realizes that she needs it as much as she, you know, as they will need her. And so, yeah, I think we all struggle with it. You know, do I really want to get out and have to put on regular clothes and do my hair just to go and hang out with these friends? I think we all question that. But then once we get there, we're with our friends and sharing all of, you know, our struggles, our successes, we realize that, yes, it's worth it. We needed this. So that's what I was hoping to portray with the book, with those three women. So hopefully it does come across.
It does. So thank you. So let's talk about Daniel. He's working undercover to catch a money laundering scheme. You know, he's working financial crimes in this specific unit within the Department of Treasury and all those different things. How much research did you conduct to get this kind of financial crime subplot right?
Well, it was a lot because, you know, one reason I specifically chose FinCEN is the like their little acronym. One reason I chose it is because when I heard about it, I read it in an article somewhere, and it just, you know, it sparked something, because I had no idea that the Treasury Department had its own, you know, its own little undercover agents. And of course it makes sense that they do because of the specific crimes, the financial crimes. But, you know, when you read romance, we have all read about Navy SEALs, their CIA, FBI, DEA. this was one that I just never seen in a romance. So I thought, oh, look at this cool, you know, they're very cool undercover people. So let's do this. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of research, of course, because I just had no idea what they are. But, you know, when it's something that's brand new to me and I need to do all this type of research, I don't even see it as work. It's just my curious mind finding, you know, discovering something new. So while it was a lot of research, it was fun. It was fun learning about this, you know, this portion of our government that I just had no idea existed. So yeah, I think they're really cool. Very cool.
It sounded so cool. Like you sounded as someone I actually work with, back in my previous job, I work at investigating Medicaid fraud. And that was something unique. And I was like, it's just, it reminded me of like that kind of jobs that are unique that you don't think about they exist, but then you realize like, oh, there is a problem on the library. You know, there
are operations.
And then obviously somebody, you know, in the government or another agency is going to like investigate those crimes. And those are interesting things to look for. Like they're fun jobs to think about it. So.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of them they work with, that's why I have him working with the DEA agent or I think I have Department of Homeland Security. They do work with other agencies a lot, but just the fact that they specifically look at financial crimes and, you know, they're very important to the national security of our country. And I was just fascinated by them. So yeah, that's why that Daniel is what he is.
It was a fun job. So I have to admit, that added a little more depth to this story. And it was just like, I love the subplot about it. It's like, who's laundering money? Like, how does this all tie together? Like it made it, even though it's not romantic suspense, it just added a lot of, like, a subplot of suspense for it.
Yes.
That's cool. So let's talk about Sunia. Sunia is killing it at work. Like, she's basically just lead her team and all those different things. But she also has a strong, as a woman of color, working in tech, she feels the need to give back. And knowing that she's paving the way for other women of color to get tech jobs. Why was it so important to showcase this in this character and also the ways her company helped her accomplish this goal?
Yes. You know, I included it because it's just so real for so many people.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, you can ask so many women of color, just with, it doesn't even matter which industry they work in. I'm sure they felt that pressure, you know, as an author. I felt that pressure, you know, being afraid that if my book doesn't do well, that publishers could use it as incentive not to give the next author of color, you know, a nice advance or not to give them the same type of print run that they would give their other authors just because they think that it's not gonna do as well. And I know that in other industries, that's how a lot of my friends and family have also felt that way. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons I included it in her character arc is just because it's real and it happens. Mm-hmm. And especially in, you know, the tech industry where there are so few women of color, especially those who are, like you say, killing it, you know, really successful. There's no doubt in my mind that a person in that industry would not feel that pressure of needing to perform, you know, be on her A game at all times because she knows that she's being scrutinized more and that it could affect those coming up behind her, you know, her success or lack thereof would affect others. So, yeah, I could not write this book or this character without including this in some way. So it absolutely had to be in there.
I love it. Yeah, I think it reflected, you know, I'm Puerto Rican, so I realized like for me, like big part of it's like paving the way and giving back. Like that's a big part of my identity, part of my
culture. Absolutely.
And so it just reminded me of like, you know, yeah, like that's what we do, you know?
Yes.
We don't question it. We don't think about it. I think what it sparked me the most was how much the company was willing to give her to allow her to do it. Because yes. so much of our time is done spent on a side project or at side way, like mm-hmm. just giving it away for free. You just, along with all your other responsibilities, like this time, like this company was able to reflect, say, you know, we see that you're doing this and we're willing to give you the backing for it, which actually was really nice.
Well, that's part of the fictional part of my writing. I have not necessarily seen that in my own personal life, but I just thought, how cool would it be to have such a cool boss? You know, the boss in the book, the owner, he is actually one of my favorite characters as a side character. Mm-hmm. If I were to create the ideal boss, he would be that, you know, just fun. And yeah, is open to helping his company do better. So yeah, that's why I put it in there, because I wrote the book and I wanted a really great boss, you know?
Yeah, I think you got it. So
great.
The next couple of questions are coming from our Patreon community. So I actually have a women's book club. And so a few of our readers, a few of our members have read your book early. So they had a couple of questions for you.
Awesome.
So the first question is, because this book is set in a tech-heavy, you know, environment, like there's a lot of jargon, there's a lot of like company culture. How much research did you conduct to get this far right?
Well, it too required a lot of research, but I also happened to, about 10 years ago, I lived in Austin and I worked for a tech company.
Oh.
So a lot of that, you know, the very techy stuff you hear in a WiMAX, it's some of the other things that I have in there, the whole issue with the, with the people stealing logins. I don't want to give too much away, but that actually is the company that I worked for provided that type of service to a lot of companies in Latin America. So I had that knowledge from when I worked with my company back in Austin. Yet, you know, tech changes so rapidly that I realized, hey, there's probably a lot different, you know, it's probably changed the way this is done now. So I found myself having to do just a ton of research just to make sure that I wasn't putting tech that was like, you know, 10 years ago tech, that some of it was still relevant. So it still required a lot of research, but thankfully I had a bit of, you know, that example from my last job to go on. But yeah, there's so much about this book that just required lots of research, just even Austin itself. Mm-hmm. I had to go back and, you know, I went for a research trip. Just because that city itself has changed so much since I last lived there. So I've probably researched more for this book than any of the 30 some odd other books that I've written. But it's because I wanted to get it right. And I loved this story and I thought it was worth the extra research to do. And I'm very happy I did.
It felt, it's that in the book said, it felt like you were in a tech company. It was contemporary. It felt that you were in Austin and it just felt like you're just part of the whole experience. Like you just got, and so it was definitely much more richer than just a regular woman's novel. There's just like, you know, hero, heroine, just work on a regular job and just, you know, fall in love and then, you know, happily ever after. Like this felt like there was actually some depth about it. There was actually conversations about, you know, current topics. There were conversations about like just a sense of what it's like to work in a tech company, you know, like to deal with money laundering. Like there was some richness for it. So it felt really good.
That's good. That means I did my job. That's exactly what I wanted. So great. Awesome.
So the Work From Project was May's pick for Book of the Month. What has been the process like for your book to be selected as an early release?
Well, I have no idea what went into Book of the Month selecting it.
Yeah.
I just screamed when they did, when I found out, because it has truly been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll be honest, I did not realize that Book of the Month was still as popular as it is. I remember my mom belonging, you know, years ago, that's how she got all those Danielle Steele books that she has, you know, but I didn't realize that, you know, with ebooks and everything, I just thought that maybe that had fallen by the wayside, but no, it is so amazing how many people, you know, belong to it. Instagram, my Instagram has been flooded with all of these gorgeous pictures of people, you know, posing or taking these pictures with the book. It has been so much fun. And I think that it has introduced my work to a lot of people who didn't know me. So, you know, just as an author, it's been, you know, great on so many fronts, just because, you know, you've got people talking about the book and then people being introduced to your work. So I am eternally grateful for Book of the Month. It's been so awesome.
Yeah, I think what it does, Book of the Month, that just gives you gateway books for women. So I think for us, like, as romance readers, we're championing all these new books that are coming out, but it's also exciting whenever Book of the Month selects a woman's book, because we know it's going to expand the audience. It's going to help other people who may not read romance be like, oh, this book's interesting, let me give it a try. And then realizing, oh my gosh, I got a backlist of books for me to pick up.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't even thought about them going to my backlist. Yay. I just thought, you know, I've seen people have tagged me and they, you know, they've said, it's usually not my thing, but the cover was so cute, I decided I'll give it a try. And that just makes me feel so good, you know, knowing that people are willing to just give it a try. So, yeah, it's so beyond my expectations. Yeah, so grateful for it.
Well, congratulations. That's an exciting feat. Now we're going to go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
Romance, of course.
So who are your favorite authors?
Well, my very favorite author, I started reading romance years ago. So Judith McNaught, who doesn't really write anymore. She's had a book that was supposed to come out years ago. I don't know if we'll ever get it, but she has just remained my absolute favorite author of all time. So Judith McNaught would be it. I also love old Sandra Browns and Laverl Spencer, authors of today. I love Alyssa Cole's books. You know, I love Phyllis Bourne is a really great humor, you know, romantic comedies. So yeah, there's some great authors out there.
Love it. What are your top three favorite books of all time?
Of all time, that would be Judith McNaught again. Paradise, Whitney, My Love, which I know some people either love it or absolutely despise it. It is one of my favorite books of all time, as problematic as it is. And Laverl Spencer, Separate Beds. It's one of my comfort reads, and I've been rereading it for like the 1,000th time, I'm sure. But it's just one of those books that, you know, it's what I cut my teeth on in romance. So they just always remain at the top of my list.
I love it. What have been a book do you read this past year or last year that you love?
Oh, well, I love one that just came out, Sasha Patel's The Trouble with Hating You. Mm-hmm. It just came out yesterday, I think. Yep. It is absolutely adorable. I loved it. I also love the bromance books, the Bromance Book Club. Yep. I read that one last year and, you know, it was great. Another is Sharina Harris, Imperfectly Happy. That one came out just a few weeks ago. It's more, in my opinion, of a like a Terry McMillan type book. Mm-hmm. It also is surrounded by friendships, but these were four college friends who, mm-hmm, 10 years later realized that their lives hasn't gone the way, you know, they planned back in college. So yeah, really good books. There's so many out there right now. They're just fabulous.
I love it. Tell us where you can find you online.
Oh, let's see. I'm everywhere. Unfortunately, I probably spend way too much time online. You know, on Twitter at Farrah Rashawn, same for Instagram at Farrah Rashawn. And I also, on Facebook, I am Farah Rashan author, I think, or, you know, just, you'll see my face for my Facebook if you search for it. I also have a book club on Facebook. They're called the Rashanettes. So my fan club, we have lots of fun. So yeah, just look me up online or on my website, of course, you know.
I love it. Thank you, Farah, for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends and share a review on iTunes. This is the best way to support the show. Want to join a romance loving community, make new friends, and get book recommendations? Join our Patreon Romance Book Club. For $5 a month, you'll be part of a virtual book club, an Instagram chat, and get monthly book recommendations. Please note I'll be donating 10% of the profit to a COVID-19 relief fund each month. To sign up, just join the link in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode. Have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.